Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights with Charlotte Spicer. Spirituality and Metaphysics Talk Radio, featuring A Course in Miracles, Dream Interpretation, Guided Meditation, and the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All. It's your opportunity to consult with a professional psychic medium, discuss past lives, the chakras, and more. We are non-denominational, and there are no limits. Want to change your life? You must first change your mind. No matter your religious structure, cultivate peace in your reality through self-awareness with an authentic spiritual teacher. And now, your host, Charlotte Spicer.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome to Spiritual Insights. I'm Charlotte Spicer. I'm always excited about every segment, but our guest today is the wildly funny Doug Rose, also known as Tenzin Karma Trinley, but we'll just call him Ten for short. To give you a little bit of an idea about Ten, on the surface, Ten is a crass-talking, wisecracking dude, but when you hear his words, you can't help but resonate with the truth that he has lived for many years. While he's written two books, he doesn't consider himself a literary genius, though his reviews on Amazon may say otherwise. What he does is helps others who are on the path of cultivating wisdom by providing sponsorship so that anyone who aspires to become a, quote, wisdom professional can achieve their goals. So we'll be talking about his books, Reincarnation Through Common Sense, and his first book, Fearless Puppy on American Road, and the real-life experiences that inspired both of them. He's got some hilarious stories to share, and I'm so excited to talk to him. Ten, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. What's up with that name, man?
Ten is short for Tenzin Karma Trinley, as you said. And how that happened, actually this story is in Fearless Puppy on American Road. But for a long, long time ago, a friend of mine took me to the first Buddhist thing that I ever did, and it was a big kind of initiation that only this guy, Kalu Rinpoche, and the Dalai Lama at that time were the only two people authorized to do this kind of initiation. But when you go through certain Buddhist initiations, they give you a Tibetan name, and it's always something that you're supposed to live up to. I mean, they never give you a name like Jackass Who Pukes on His Own Shoes or anything
right.
like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's always something that you're supposed to, like, aspire to.
True.
So mine, Tenzin Karma Trinley, literally translated from the Tibetan, means the activity of the Buddha teaching. So I like that, and I figured I want to keep that because, I mean, really, there's only so stupid and nasty you can be when you're walking around with a name like the activity of the Buddha teaching.
Right.
So it's a very helpful mechanism for keeping on track. But obviously, nobody can pronounce that. So I wouldn't, like, ask my friends to call me Tenzin Trinley. They'd, like, go find a different friend. So we cut it short, and it's just 10, and it's one syllable. Everybody can pronounce it all right, and it still helps to keep me on track. And my friend who took me there, his name he got was the Enlightened Protector. And again, it's always something for you to aspire towards, you know.
Yeah, I'm very
familiar
with that.
So that's how that one happened, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm familiar with that. A lot of my friends have Sanskrit names, where in the
right.
Hindu tradition, you know, you're given a nickname or a name to aspire to, and everything means something different for that person. I often wondered out loud, actually, if it's something for each individual person, depending on the name and the translation, if it was something they needed or if it was something they had, you know what I mean? So,
well, there's, you know, several schools of thought on that. I mean, I think that Native peoples, you know, Native American peoples have it too, and probably a whole lot of other folks. when you go through certain initiations and rites, you get a spiritual name. Now, whether this is just something they make up that just happens to fall on you by accident, I mean, the theory is that there's a reason for everything, so that your name actually comes to you for your specific purposes, and it is something that you need. And then other people would say it's just nonsense, you're playing with yourself. But, you know, so
I
don't know what it actually is. I mean, like everything else that people talk about, what it actually is on the plane that we're on, we don't know what anything actually is. I mean, the Dalai Lama himself said that what we know about eternity is about equal to what a chicken that hasn't broken out of its shell yet, you know, out of the egg yet, knows about the outside world. Right. So, you know, that's where the word belief and faith come in, I guess, is that you take whatever slant of the situation, you know, works for you and is logical and truthful. You know, we can't go too far with this and, you
right.
know, be... But
I think we can all respect the intention behind a spiritual name.
Exactly. Regardless of what the actual truth of the situation is, you know, in the bigger picture, it's still something to be respected and to use for its positive attributes, you know. I mean, if there's something good there and it's working for you, then it needs to be exercised. And if it's something bad and it's not working for you, then it needs to be dropped. And it's not rocket science, or, you know,
right.
pretty simple stuff there.
I love it. I love it. So I wanted to kind of give the audience an idea, kind of a sense of your personality.
Oh, boy.
I like to keep things down to earth. I really do. But I still feel at the way we met, which was on, you had contacted me about the show, and I had
right.
been receiving, I've received over 100 emails from people telling me all about their expertise and their wisdom in this nice bio with pictures and, you know, news clippings, all this great stuff. And here's what Ken wrote to me, just off the cuff. He goes, how about a happy hitchhiking ex-junkie turns author slash philanthropist who raises large sums of money and awareness for causes through charity projects of his own invention, often while remaining homeless himself. Previous projects have involved governors, senators, rock stars, and pro sports teams, as well as hundreds of volunteers. Right there, I said, I need to talk to this guy. And I called you up, and we just hit it off, you know?
Yep, yeah, that we did. That's always fun speaking with you.
Hysterical laughing. So let's give everybody an idea of what you're really doing, because, you know, you wrote two books, but there's an underlying purpose.
Yeah, I wrote two books, but I'm not really an author. Well, I guess I'm an author now, but that wasn't the intent. I wasn't going out to, like, write books and become a famous author. I really don't care about that. I was just looking for a funding vehicle. I want to fund wisdom professionals, all right, people who devote their lives to studying wisdom and passing it around to other people who ask for it and are in a situation where they need it. So it seemed like writing books and selling them and using the money for that would be, you know, a little bit better odds than winning the lottery, probably not too much. But I couldn't come up with a better option, so I figured that was a real good thing to do. And plus, there's a lot of wisdomous stuff in the books. I mean, they're basically very entertaining from what people tell me. But there's a lot of, like in Fearless Puppy, for example, it's all about me hitchhiking around for 35 years. I started out as a drug dealer in Brooklyn, New York, and then as a young teenager, it was kind of obvious that this was going to end in death pretty soon, so I better get the hell out. So I started hitchhiking. Everything worked so well that I just kept doing it. And there were 80 individual stories in there, and each one kind of has a little point to it. Some are more obvious than others. There are several encounters with Tibetan lamas and Buddhist monks, Native American wise men, But there's also a lot of meetings with hookers and junkies and different types of people that, I mean, during the course of hitchhiking 100,000 miles or whatever over 35 years, you're going to meet a lot of interesting people.
Uh-huh.
And each one has a story, and you may think, like, I shouldn't even be, like, near a person like this. But at the same time, there's something you can get from that. There's a kernel of wisdom in there, whether it's what to do or what not to do. So, yeah, that is basically what the books are about. And I figure if I can put from these people who I all call my teachers, I mean, it's kind of more obvious that the lamas and the Native American wise men are teachers, but also everybody is a teacher if you're paying attention. I mean, you can, some of the biggest teachers are just flowers. You take a look at them growing. They're like using the environment to their advantage. They're giving something good back to them. If you have the mind to stare at a flower and get out of it what there actually is there to mm-hmm. be gotten out of it, then that's a great teacher without it having to say a word to you. So there are all these stories in the books, you know.
Mm-hmm. Everybody has something to teach and everybody has something to learn. So, no, yeah. I don't think we should turn down any opportunity to learn. As long as
right.
we're in a safe environment, it doesn't mean, you know, expose yourself to danger. But
yeah.
I have met people along the way like that where they might have been into some things that I'm certainly not interested in being involved in, but they were nice people. You know, they
yeah.
had nice personalities and they were nice to me. So I had a few nice conversations with some people.
But
yeah, some of the descriptions say, all manner of sinners and saints are portrayed in these amazing true stories that read like a fantasy. And it mentions some of the people. You have a guy who is his own uncle, heavenly hell's angels, phony preachers, angelic witches, benevolent heroin addicts, all this lurid sex. Oh, my God. Like, so who's this guy who is his own uncle? Tell us about that.
Well, let me tell you about the one that people seem to get the biggest kick out of from responses from readers. It's the all-lesbian rock and roll band playing a concert for the deaf.
Oh, my God.
Now, I'm not making that up. I was there. They played a concert for, and not. I'm not talking about a benefit to raise money for the deaf people. It was a concert for, well, there were all deaf people in the audience. And this was like one of the most amazing experiences that I ever had, and I've had a few. This, I'm, you know, get a ride with these women and become friends, and they say, we'll pick you up later and take you to the show. And then they start explaining to me that there are teachers at the deaf school. These are people who had hearing before and had lost it. So they had a touchstone for what music was anyways in their consciousness. It's not like they had no concept and were born without hearing.
Right.
So I go there, and I'm a little bit nervous because I'm pretty young at this point and not very worldly yet. And they go, okay, here, these are a couple of our favorite couple here, and you just sit with them. And I look at them like I'm lost in the woods, you know. And I mm-hmm. just sit down, have a good time. We have to go up on the stage and do our thing. They get up and start playing, and the people all around me, I'm the only one who can hear. And the people all around me are dancing in rhythm with the music. And you can see them, like, tapping on things, and they got a sensibility for it. Of course, they're watching it with their eyes, but they also have a sensibility for it. And I'm talking to the people who are with me. When I say talking, it's not your regular vocal conversation. I mean, we're sign languaging, and one of them could read lips a little bit,
uh-huh.
and going back and forth with different gestures. And by the time it got done, I knew what they did before the accident, what the accident was, what happened, how many kids they had, where they worked, what they were doing there, how old they were.
Wow.
Just gave me a whole completely different point of view of sensory-deprived people. I mean, obviously, we've all heard that once one sense goes down, another one comes up.
yes.
and get so much sharper. So it would make sense that if the hearing wasn't working so well, the vision would be very sharp. Touch would be sharper.
Yeah.
But I think it seems like it also gets into the psychic sensibilities, whereas the intuitive process was so jacked up in these people that we actually had a conversation, and I walked out of there a completely different person. You know,
that sounds so cool. I do understand, because believe it or not, my first job when I was 10 or 11 years old was as a babysitter, and the lady I babysat for was a deaf stripper. I swear
now,
to God.
That's one I hadn't heard of yet.
She was a deaf stripper, and I went ahead and asked. I mean, to talk on the telephone, you took the phone and stuck it into the TTY machine. It was actually a modem, right? So you put the phone in the modem, and then you type back and forth to the other people. So when the phone rang, if I answered it and nobody was talking, I knew to put it on the modem, and I would type, hello, this is the babysitter, and they would type, you know, is she there? And I'm, no, she's at work. I'm watching the baby and doing whatever. And so, you know, I did that for a couple of years, and she paid good money. And she was nice, but she said she can feel the vibration, and she knows how to move to the vibration of the music. So that was my first experience with a deaf person. And now you're telling me about this awesome concert, so I'm totally there at the concert with you. I can totally get it.
Yeah, that was quite an experience. That, and that's what Fearless Puppy is. It's 80 individual chapters of meeting these people, going along the road over the course of like over 30 years of hitchhiking. Reincarnation Through Common Sense is a completely different book. That's the new one.
Yeah, what's the difference between the two?
Yeah, well, not, you know, you can recognize stylistic things in there, but it's like it was written by two different people, and the reason is because it basically was. I am a different person while writing that book as opposed to when I was hitchhiking around for 35 years. I went to Southeast Asia. It's like kind of after. It's a follow-up to Fearless Puppy. So I decided I wanted to see something different than America. Went to Southeast Asia. Got there, was taken advantage of by some people, and I figured I'd drown the problem with alcohol. Well, as we all know, that doesn't work out too well. You know, 999 out of 1,000 times, that's going to be a pretty bad solution.
Yeah.
So next thing I know, I'm on the other side of the world, penniless, can't speak the language, very few people there speak English, and I don't have a ticket home, nothing, just kind of lost in the woods. So a friend of mine who can translate brings me over to the temple and translates conversation with the head monk. And the head monk says, you stay here, and the monks are your brothers, and the nuns are your sisters, and I'm your old. Basically, they adopted me and said, there's your cabin up there, and they gave me one of the monk cabins. And he said, you can do whatever this Buddhist stuff you want to do, and none of it at all if you don't want to do it. You know, we can, you can join us for the meditations or for the different thing, which I ended up, like, joining them for a lot of it because it was just so interesting to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But he says, if you want to just go to the beach and go swimming, whatever you want to do, fine. I ended up staying there for half a year. And when I got out of there, I was quite a different person. It really was a reincarnation, all right? But the reincarnation through common sense thing is something that needs a little explanation, I think, because when people hear reincarnation, they a lot of times, more often than not, think about dying, actually death, and coming back in another body.
Yeah.
You know? That's not what the book is about. This reincarnation is something that happens to all of us every day. Usually we don't realize it, notice it, or take advantage of it. But with every thought, or direct it, which is the main point, but with every thought and every action that we do, we're a new person. All right? That person plus the new action that's incorporated into your being, into your mind stream, whatever. So that's the point of the reincarnation that I'm talking about. One of the most famous Buddhist monks in Southeast Asia said it doesn't really matter. Somebody asked him about reincarnation, and he said it doesn't matter what's going on there. We don't know, you know. We don't know. Kind of like the Dalai Lama's quote about a chick doesn't know what's going on outside of its shell until it breaks through the shell.
Right.
Well, we don't know what's going on there, but it doesn't matter, because if there is such a thing as death and coming back into another body, it's only going to be whatever the result of whatever we've done here during this life. So you might as well forget about it. Concentrate on being as decent as you can in this particular life. And then if there is another one, you'll go to some place where you're all set.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And, so
it's a fascinating topic, but we don't want to focus on past lives. In my work as a medium, I can tap into a past life, but that the only information I will get about that past life is what pertains to, in most cases, a medical issue in this life.
Yeah.
I'll nutshell it like that. It's generally a medical issue or a relationship issue, and then you get one little scene from a past life that says, okay, now if you let that go, you can resolve this issue. But for those who don't have access to that, basically just do what you have to do in this lifetime is the advice.
Yeah, yeah. I know Jacques Cousteau had an interesting quote about let's just do what we can do here, much the same as that monk and the Dalai Lama said. Probably my favorite reincarnation quote, although it doesn't really apply to what we're talking about, as Eleanor Roosevelt, when they asked her if she believed in reincarnation, she said, I don't think it'd be any stranger for me to find myself in another life than it is for me to find myself in this one.
Oh, my God, that's great.
So, which was a pretty clever thing to say, I suppose.
That is very clever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's what that book is about. That's the reincarnation part, is not to die and come back. It's the realizing what you can do with this rebirth that takes place pretty much every minute of your life if you want to grab it. I mean, look, right now I could drop this phone, go out, grab a rifle, climb a bell tower, become a sniper, and kill a bunch of people. I could also drop the phone, walk out, start picking up poor people up off the street and taking care of them and become another Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
Now, the point is that, I mean, most of us, all of us pretty much, fall in the middle somewhere. But the point is that these options are all open to us, and you can literally become a new person instantly.
Yes.
There are no possibilities within reason that aren't open. I mean, you can't go jump off a cliff and expect to fly, but that's going to end badly. But,
no, but you can evolve, and if, you know, life is, I'll throw a sort of a quote out there, life is a series of deaths. It's the death of the ego. It's the death of a present circumstance. Change is constant. Yeah. So with each evolutionary step, you can have a rebirth. You can turn over a new leaf. Pull out any phrase you like to fit the bill. You can assert change in your life that is either wanted or desired, and grow in that respect, as you say, have a rebirth, or evolve as a human being, but evolve as a spiritual being, having a human experience, and just use that human experience to achieve your goals, basically. Like you said, what do you want to do? Do you want to do good, or do you want to do bad? And that's the whole point of you writing these books. I'm glad that, you know, it might have been a fun experience to write down and recount all 80 of those stories for Fearless Puppy, or to really examine your spiritual journey at with the monks. But what you're doing with it isn't so much trying to, yes, you want to get your message out, but you're using these as vehicles to provide sponsorship for other people who are on a spiritual path, and you call them wisdom professionals. So let's talk about how you're using the book sales, which you don't collect any of the money from the book sales. You're using it for another purpose, so I'll let you explain that, okay?
The book sales are to sponsor wisdom professionals, beginning with but not exclusive to Tibetan monks and nuns. I think it's obvious. Anybody who's read a newspaper during the past 50 years knows that there's a serious shortage of wisdom in the world. What is wisdom? It's the same thing as common sense. It's the knowledge that the whole world don't revolve around our butts, all right? Mm-hmm. That everybody else in the world is just as important as we are, has the same potential if given the same opportunities, and that the playing field has to, at least on this level, be leveled off a little bit. Mm-hmm. All right? Respect for everybody, love for everybody, compassion, caring, doing good instead of harm. There's a basic human golden rule qualities. That's common sense and has become wisdom now because it's so scarce we can call it wisdom because common sense isn't always common practice.
Right.
So whatever can be done to increase the number of wisdom professionals on the planet, that's what this project is all about. Okay, there's a little wisdom in the books that all comes from teachers that I've met along the way. But, it's pretty obvious that we need more of it. We need more people stopping and thinking a little bit. And the more wisdom teaches, the more people we have that devote their lives to this, then the more opportunity there's going to be for folks who need it to come and, like, just sit and calm down and listen to these people. And sit and calm down, I mean, a lot of people have the potential to be their own wisdom teachers. They just don't do it. Everybody's trying to fit 10 pounds of crap in a 5-pound bag.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't fit, you know.
It's not
going to happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Nobody just, like, sits down and considers. A lot of people aren't even aware of the possibility that there are other options, you know. They run their lives, and they don't. Their lives are run by external factors more often than not. It's like they're caught in a stream, and the current is running heavy, and they're in there, and they're getting washed down the river, and they're so panicky about that that they don't even realize that there's a bank on either side that they could swim over to and crawl up and start doing something different. And a lot of people spend their whole lives like this, just getting swept away by cultural nuance and external things around them.
Mm-hmm.
And folks could, they don't, and we need wisdom teachers to point this fact out, but folks could just sit and don't think. Just sit and do nothing, even if it's just 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes in the evening. That will accomplish something. Gradually, you'll start building up the time of the amount of sitting that you do. But just to not think about anything is going to bring wisdom to a person and from within a person. To say to a person is kind of the wrong thing because none of this comes from external sources. You know, to sit there and expect that peace of mind is going to land on you because it flies in from outer space or Jesus or Buddha or Moses or Allah or whatever. It's not going to, it comes from within you. I mean, if the radio station that you are, if that electrical field that you are isn't tuned in to the bigger possibilities, it doesn't matter what those bigger possibilities are. And this example has been used before, but it's still very true. It's not that there isn't anything out there. I mean, obviously, there's spiritual content in the universe.
Sure.
But if we're not tuned into that, if you're running around all day thinking about the wife, the kids, the job, the bills, the husband, the house, what's he doing, what's she thinking about me, what's the neighbor talking about now, then you're not living within yourself. And you're at the mercy of basically every passerby in the street at that point because you don't have that internal fortitude to be in touch with yourself. Now, when you have that and you're in touch with yourself, then you can communicate with more cosmic possibilities. But if you're not there, who are those cosmic possibilities going to talk to? They have to have a place to land, you know?
Well, there's a gap. There's a recognition gap, because if that, depending on the frequency at which someone is operating, like you said, in the busyness of life and wondering what other people are thinking and then getting ahead, comparing themselves to others, when that opportunity or that information comes to you, how would you recognize it? You're not tuned in, so
yeah.
It could come to you, but you're not going to recognize it because that's not the channel you're listening to. You're not going to recognize it.
Right, and in order to get tuned in, you have to have an in-body experience, and you have to live within yourself. Everybody talks about the out-of-body experience like it's this big, high spiritual thing, but we're constantly living in an out-of-body experience. You're at work. You're doing that. You're not thinking about what's internally going on in your own emotional framework, in your mind, heart, body. You're making out the bills. You're worried about finances, worried about the kids, how are they doing in school. But all these things are necessary to an extent, but when they cover up who you actually are and you know, when you're doing, outdoes your being, then who's doing the doing if there's no beer there?
That's when life exceedingly difficult in the perception of the mind, where, you know, we can handle a lot. We can raise children, hold down a job, keep a home. But when you're so overwhelmed and depressed and suicidal and all this other stuff, you've got to stop, unplug, and really look at what's going on beneath the surface that is making you so unhappy. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's it in a nutshell. And that's the unplugging part, the getting back into your body, as opposed to all these external concerns that everybody has. That's where it's at, and that's what we're talking about, you know. Just a few minutes in the morning and a few minutes in the evening will help anybody who does it immensely. Just pay attention to yourself, all right?
Yes, it helps
pay
tremendously.
Pay attention to yourself.
Okay. Well, I wanted to ask, in your 6 months with the monks, did you pick up an effective meditation technique that you use?
There are several. There are many effective meditation techniques. I didn't really pick up any. Well, I probably did pick them up by osmosis. But, of course, not being able to speak the language and they couldn't speak English, I couldn't really, get a formal instruction on it.
Right.
But I do Tibetan mantras, do some just meditations that I've made up myself, some that are crossovers between Hindu and Native American stuff. There's all kind of, it doesn't matter what particular method. You can just sit there and breathe, all right? You can just sit there and breathe from the bottom. Can we try something with the listeners for a minute?
Yeah. Go for it.
All right. This will take about 2 minutes, all right?
Okay.
All right. Breathe from your feet up to your head and then slowly back out and down to your feet. Now, again, the lungs only go. We know where the lungs are. But in your mind, you're picturing that the breath is actually coming up from your heels to the top of your head and back down, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Slowly coming up, breathe it in, and back out. And you're not sucking the air in like a vacuum cleaner. The air is almost breathing you. And it comes in, and then it goes out, and you're not pushing it forcefully or anything, just, you know, not like all out in one gulp thing. But
I'm using
gradually.
A count of eight. I'm counting in on eight and breathing out on eight as it goes down my spine into my feet.
You can count, but that's a distraction also. If you just
I won't count anymore.
And have it go up and go down. And all your attention on the breath and on the sound of my voice. All right, and there's nothing else, and you're not distracted by anything external, and not sucking in hard like a vacuum, pushing out rough, just gradual, let the air breathe you in to the top of your head, out to the feet, just listening to my voice. Are you listening to my voice?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now turn your attention to the one who's doing the listening.
Mm.
That's it. That's who we really are, that person in there. All right? But we get so distracted by the nonsense that we lose touch with ourselves. And once you lose touch with yourself, you better get it back pretty quick. All right?
Yeah.
Because everything you do is directly influenced by whether you're there or not while you're doing it.
Yeah.
And if you are out of your mind, and it's, people say out of your mind like you're crazy or something, but no, it's a standard human condition that
yes.
people are running around out of their minds. They're somewhere else. If people would get back into their mind, and that's
mm-hmm.
what the wisdom professionals kind of tell people and help them to find the place and the way they can get back in their own minds.
Right.
Because that's where you read a newspaper, that's where all the problems come from, because all the violence and crime and everything else, the politics, the nonsense and the crap and the greed and the sloth and whatever else you can think of
mm-hmm.
comes from people who are out of their minds, because anybody thinking rationally wouldn't do stuff like that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So,
and if anybody went along with your guided experience here, you'll notice the chatter in your mind is completely silent. And
yeah.
no more chatter, and that's what we have to get away from. Meditation is the space between thoughts, because thoughts are what trip us up. It's what we start to believe, you know.
And whatever you want to do comes from not doing it first. You know, whatever something you want to put there comes from nothing. And if you don't have that nice, peaceful nothing, that space, that gap, established there for your thoughts and actions to come out of, then
mm-hmm.
everything is coming out of a hectic, haywired kind of place. And the functional ability of those thoughts and actions is going to be limited in their positivity and maybe even negative. You know, maybe even can do some harm. And judging by the news, again, there's a lot of harm being done. Now, of course,
sure
the news, we've all been mediated a little bit too much. I haven't watched a newscast or read a newspaper in about 30 years, and there's a good reason for it. The human central nervous system is not designed to take in all the crap that's going on around the planet within a 30-minute period. It's like sticking your finger in a light socket. It's just too much shock for the system.
It is.
And we get fed that just like we get fed the violent programming. That jacks up your adrenaline and gets you more up and paying attention to the commercials that come on, which
mm-hmm.
are trying to sell you whatever kind of crap you don't need that it's trying to sell you. And
mm-hmm.
that actually is the purpose of commercial television. As
Absolutely.
Opposed to the public broadcasting system, which sometimes can give you stuff that's actually worth watching.
Yes.
So,
I like Super Soul Sunday, actually. But I wanted to outline a few of the ways that the money is used to help people who want to cultivate wisdom in their lives. Tell us about the idea to build accommodations near meditation centers where tourists and travelers and students and the youth can stay there, and it's a constant source of funding that would provide basically, what, scholarships for people? How would you describe it?
Now, well, I'm trying to hit this wisdom thing from as many different angles as possible, okay? So there's some wisdom I've gotten from all of my teachers in the books. Then the funds are going to fund wisdom professionals. Instead of just giving money to something, when you give money to something, it's a wonderful thing, but then the money's gone, it's over, and the problem is still there. I'd like to establish something that would send permanent income, that money can keep coming to train these wisdom professionals. And that was the idea I came up, was a guest house near a big teaching center Mm-hmm. So that people who want to come to hear a Lama talk or a monk or whoever it is, any kind mm-hmm. of wisdom professional, maybe shaman, then this guest house would be in the area. They can come and stay there. They pay to stay there. They're right near the place. They go in for the teachings, and the money that they pay for staying in the guest house just keeps going, going to fund more and more wisdom professionals.
Okay.
And there's no end to that funding if people keep showing up to stay in the guest house or hotel, motel, whatever you want to call it. So that would be the thing I'd like to do, is build a number of these places in different locations and have it in the charter of the place where all the money goes to, and percentage to this place, some to that place, like that. The people who want to come and get wisdom teachings to a certain place would have a place to stay to be able to go there and get those teachings.
Right.
And they can also, you know, and that would be perpetual, and then the money that they spend on staying in those places would go to fund the wisdom professionals as well, and then while they're there, there'll be books around they can buy and fund them again some more.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's,
mm-hmm.
there's...
make it an ever-spinning cycle of support.
That's exactly the point, because, again, I mean, there's a lot of wonderful efforts out there, and I've worked on some of them, famine relief in New England, and, well, the famine was in Massachusetts, but the project was in Massachusetts and Vermont, and the famine was actually in Africa. But, but all these different causes and concerns, wonderful things, very necessary, have to get done in the immediate. But for the long term, I think we need the smarts to fix all these things. I mean, if there was enough wisdom in the world, nobody who's compassionate, or, I mean, wisdom can almost be translated to compassion. Right?
Sure.
You realize that everybody else has equal value as a human, therefore you take care of everybody else as you would yourself. Somebody isn't going to walk past somebody starving to death and just step over them like a lot of people do on the city streets.
Right.
You know, so I think the root cause of all the other problems and what we need to shoot for in the long term is the wisdom aspect, because that covers everything else. I mean, if there was enough wisdom in the world to counteract all the fear and greed and nonsense that we get enculturated with,
mm-hmm.
you know, if there was enough wisdom, all these other problems would take care of themselves, because people wouldn't allow them to come about in the first place.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, you mentioned the famine in Africa. Is that the project you were working on with Governor Dukakis?
Yeah, that was really pretty interesting. I was trying to drain the world of its beer supply in the 1980s. And
oh.
while me and a friend, couple of friends were sitting in our usual watering hole, watching something on the TV, and I think it was Hugh Downs on 2020, came mm-hmm. out with a story about the African famine relief in Ethiopia a year or 2 years before the Live Aid and We Are the World and Hands Across America and all of that stuff started.
Right.
So it was pretty early in the, the press coverage of that, you know, horrendous thing that was going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting at the bar, and everybody's going, let's look at that. That's awful. I wish we can do something about it. And something just struck me. I don't know what. Maybe I just had that right amount of beers or something. I don't know. But something just struck me. I said, well, I can do something about it. And I started doing something about it, you know.
What'd you do?
And, well, I was working at the time as a juvenile counselor at the abused kids. And some had been referred by the state because they'd been taken out of their home. Some had been through the court systems and got put in there. So and decided to do a little tag sale. And we'd collect stuff from the neighborhood and then sell it and then send the money to the famine relief. Next thing I knew, it did itself. It just got out of hand, really. Mm-hmm. And we had it the fire chief gave us a big room in the firehouse to put all the donations. People started donating TVs and couches and stuff that I had never expected. I thought it was going to be little tchotchkes out front of the juvenile center. Turns out we had to have the whole Amherst Common there downtown. And it started rolling. I figured, why not? And this was I was doing this as much for the kids because you had to see the look on these kids. I mean, I get a little choked up every time I think about it, but these were kids who never got to think too much of themselves. They were hurt, and they were always in a position where they had to wonder what their self-worth was, because why did I end up here in this home? Other people have normal families, blah, blah, and on and on. And to see them when they were told how much money was raised and that they actually saved people's lives by doing this, I mean, the kids were glowing. They were just glowing. That was one of the most amazing parts. But anyways, to make a long story a little bit shorter, because this story by itself could go on for hours, it stretched. I went around to all the businesses, and each of them donated five. This is in the Northampton, Amherst area of Massachusetts. Uh-huh. Which in the early 80s, first of all, America was enjoying a cocaine and sports car prosperities back then. That was back before all the yuppies became waiters again. But it was incredible that all the businesses donated 5% of a certain day during that month of their profits. And I didn't have any of the money come through me. I said, here's a list of five different things. There was Save the Children, something else, but reliable, well-known, been established and around for a long time, reputable, thank you, that's the word I was looking for, charities. So people didn't have to wonder about who the hell is this guy, we're giving him the money. So they didn't have to deal with that. So there was a massive response. The newspapers got into it. They did a bunch of articles, not only about me and the project, but they posted every business that was donating 5%. All right, well, this worked so well on the local level that the mayor wanted to get into it, and he proclaimed Massachusetts for Africa a week or something in Northampton. Mm-hmm. It just kept going and growing and growing and growing.
And then
finally,
you were recognized by Congress.
Well, the next thing you know, I'm in Dukakis with them in the governor's office, which was Dukakis at the time, and there's all these people, the head of the AFL-CIO, the Massachusetts Teachers Union, which then passed the whole project through the public school systems. I can't imagine how much money those kids raised, because you know how kids are. They really get on it.
Yeah.
Went through the public school systems. The AFL-CIO put it in their newsletter asking for contributions. The Celtics sent ML Carr. The New England Patriots put it up on their scoreboard. And Aaron Neville became an honorary director. A bunch of different bands did benefit shows and stuff around the state. And all this got coordinated from one drunken jackass sitting on a bar stool deciding he can get up off that bar. I mean, I had an experience with a guy a few months later where he came into the same watering hole. I was back there, and he came into the same bar there, and we kind of knew him. Some of the people I was sitting with kind of knew him. He was a nice enough guy, so we said, come on, sit down with us, and he gets halfway through his first beer, and he looks at me. And the way he's looking at me, I'm thinking, is this guy on acid or what? I mean, he's looking at me like I'm an untapped keg or something. He's having a hallucination. And all of a sudden he goes, oh, you're the guy from the newspapers. You're great. I said, don't be an idiot. I'm just a drunk from Yugos like you. And it snapped in his brain. He finally got it, you know. And this is what I hope everybody will eventually get. There's nothing special about me, all right? There's nothing special about any of these people that you look up to and say, oh, look what they did, look what they did. What's special about them is they got off their asses and decided to do it instead of sitting around bitching about it, to turn your complaints into functional solutions, all right? Well, if you're focused on problems, you're screwed. If you're going to focus on solutions, something can get done. Something can actually get done. So, and that's the only difference. I mean, I'm no rocket scientist. I'm just a guy, you know?
Yeah.
But I just decided that something, this situation was so wrong that I had to at least put my little drop into that ocean. So everybody is sitting around yelling at the ocean. Oh, you're so dirty and polluted. Get clean, blah, blah, blah. And you know, it's a metaphor for humanity.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
But humanity, metaphorically speaking, the ocean is only a whole collection of drops. It's us.
Mm-hmm.
No, the paint ain't going to get changed except by individual brush strokes, you know?
Right.
No big, everything changes overnight and somebody comes from outer space and saves us. It's nonsense. It's just ridiculous, you know? And people sitting around waiting for that are the problem, because the only way that ocean is ever going to change is when the individual drops in it start to change. One at a time is all. And everybody's sitting around going, I shouldn't keep saying everybody, because, of course, it's not everybody. But a lot of people are sitting around saying, oh, what can I do? I can't affect anything. It's all gotten away from us. It's out of hand. And again, they're like getting washed down the stream without realizing there's a bank they can swim to
and start
something different altogether. Get up and do whatever you want
to
do.
Float to the bank, you know, just float.
Yep.
Don't overdo it. You have more power than you think. Each of us is infinitely more powerful than we really believe, you know. And it's frightening
to
think that, you know. But,
without question. And that's what reincarnation through common sense is.
Realizing
that we have that ability, that it is only our drop that's going to change the whole ocean and the other drops of the individuals. And people sitting around thinking they're powerless, don't use that as an excuse, because even though it is really difficult for an individual in a large society to make any kind of noticeable change, doesn't matter, because that's the only place it can happen.
Exactly.
It can't happen anywhere else, you know. That is the source of the change, is each individual.
And we can't convince ourselves that we have to do something huge like donate $10,000 to make a difference. You can donate a dollar, and it will make a difference, you know, because
you can help an old lady. You can help an old lady across the street.
Yes.
You can do whatever. You know, you can go to a homeless shelter and just, like, you know, help them volunteer and feed the people. Just talk to somebody.
Go to an old age home and sit and hear somebody's story about their life.
One of the most dangerous things about this planet is the loneliness. I mean, Mother Teresa recognized this and started getting her sisters of charity to work on the problem in America, because a lot of stuff in the Western world involves that feeling of isolation, helplessness, powerlessness, you know. And just to go talk to somebody, I mean, look, how many people go out and check the mail, and if your neighbor's over there checking the mail at his mailbox, don't even make eye contact. Not only don't you know who the people who live on your block are, but you don't talk to them when you see them. It's just like a nod, and you're looking down at the ground. You know, if you don't know who the people on your block are, it's going to be hard to get into a communicative spirit with the rest of the world. And you know, and what is, I mean, we're all here. You can talk about spirit and get all lofty and everything. But meanwhile, each individual human is an embodied spirit.
Absolutely.
So if you're not going to talk to what's in front of you, how are you going to talk to what's in outer space?
Most people would rather talk on the internet behind a screen name or something.
It's a little safer, and they feel safer.
Nope.
It's understandable. You know, I'm not like just saying, oh, look at these people. It's understandable because we've been so mediated by the media, especially, and it's been such a fear-inducing culture because people pay blindly for protection if they're scared. So if people are turned into sheeple, then they just follow along, and you get the ignorant crap that you get with racism and all kinds of ridiculous stuff where you turn on the TV and every crime is committed by a black person. Well, that's kind of selective broadcasting, isn't it?
It sure is.
Every mention of anybody that is connected to Islam is in the negative light. There's nothing positive there.
I know. There's
9,999 Muslims who are as nice as you or me or anybody else, and one lunatic. There's no more of a lunatic fringe in Islam than there is in Christianity, for crying out loud.
Absolutely. I grew up Catholic.
Yeah, but we've been mediated. I mean, we've been fed all this negative information, and that's it. It's a little bit understandable.
Yeah.
Why things have gotten to this point, and people are often hiding behind a computer screen or don't talk to their neighbors. That doesn't change the fact that it has to be overcome.
Yeah.
All right, there's adjustments need to be made. Some reincarnation needs to happen before we die.
And if it takes is a little research about something that you are gaining a prejudice against, then go out and do it, you know?
Well, there you go. I mean, that's the key to the whole thing. If you went out and talked to a Muslim person, a real one, not the manufactured one by the media, but a real one, then you realize that these are all people. And we had this when I was a kid growing up, which was a long time ago. It was before the Civil Rights Bill, and a lot of people were scared of black people, and thought they were intellectually inferior and had all these misconceptions. And then as the neighborhood started getting a little bit more integrated on the fringes and they started talking to the people, they go, look how ridiculous, what an idiot I've been.
You know?
That's bizarre. These people are great. And look, Muhammad had on the hilt of his sword something about admit the truth even if it's against yourself and love your neighbor. Very Christian principle kind of thing.
Right.
And all these religions, actually. I mean, you can go through every Western religion that's sharing the same biblical God, even though they give him a different name. But if you go through every Western religion, there's a lot of this, you know, thinking it's the only way. It's from not actually knowing what the other side is, you know, and you're making a judgment based on what you see on TV.
It's fear
that's
of the
not
unknown.
The person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you need exposure to gain experience. But I was lucky in that respect because in the 70s, I had black family members.
Well,
so
I had that
positive experience, and then at home, you did not speak negatively against any culture. And then at school, you didn't do it there either. So I had a triple whammy that gave me such positive reinforcement, and you know, I wish that for everybody. But even
well,
if someone
yeah,
doesn't have
lucky
that
person.
Advantage, I am lucky, but if you don't have that advantage, go create that experience for yourself. Get to know somebody that you might think you might not have anything in common with, you know?
Right.
Don't do that. And you have done amazing things with your life, and a lot of it you did while you were homeless, of all things.
Yeah.
I did
that whole Africa project with actually while I went to the governor's office there. I was sleeping on other people's floors in Boston and panhandling for food. I remember I had to send something to Senator Kennedy's office, and I had to panhandle for enough money for the postage.
Oh, my God.
And stuff like that. But, but who cares? I mean, when it gets to, yeah, I'm all right, I'm a little extreme maybe, but everybody can do a little bit of something.
Absolutely.
You know, to wake themselves up. And once they wake themselves up, then it just comes naturally. You're not going to let people sit there and suffer like that when you realize you basically are those people. We're all basically the same and equal.
We're all one, exactly.
Yeah, and we're all one in several senses of that expression, yeah.
Right, and all this is documented. If you'd like to see the newspaper articles about 10, just go to his website, fearlesspuppy.org, and it's got all the information you need about Fearless Puppy on American Roads, hilarious 80 stories of his interesting travels, reincarnation through common sense. You can learn about the project. You can learn more about 10. There's press that you can see how he was recognized by Congress. They actually mentioned his name in a congressional document. You got an award. You've done a lot of stuff, and you continue to keep doing this stuff. And
yeah, and also at the fearlesspuppy.org website are sample chapters from both books. So if anybody has an interest in taking a look at that and you want to see a little bit of what it's like before you actually buy the book, then that would be a good place to do it. There's also a lot of interviews there. I hope to get a link to this one and put it up there, too.
Oh,
and,
yeah, I'll have it for you in 10 minutes after we go off the air. But you have other projects. If people are interested in something with Greenpeace and Orphanage in Mexico, it's more than just one project. That you can find a way to get involved at whatever level is comfortable for you. Just go to fearlesspuppy.org and read about everything this amazing man has going on. And
yeah,
I hope you'll keep this.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, that's okay. But I was just going to say I hope you'll keep us apprised of your progress.
Oh, yeah, I certainly will. Certainly will. I always talk to you. I love you. You're great.
Yeah, I love you. You ain't losing me.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. But, all those other projects. I mean, the first one was African Famine Relief, and then I had so much fun with that, I started doing a couple of other ones. But now it's pretty much expressly this wisdom professionals thing, because after a period of years, like we were talking about it before, I figured out that the root cause of all those other things, you know, the reason there are orphans and people just don't take them in, the reason that people are starving to death and people just don't feed them, the greed, fear, whatever it is, it all comes down in the long run to a lack of wisdom, because once that wisdom is circulated through the planet to the extent that fear and greed are now, once the word cooperation enjoys the same status that the word competition does now, and once those kinds of things are straightened out, all those other problems are going to be taken care of themselves. So I pretty much dropped the individual efforts that were going on quite a while ago, and I'm just focusing on what I consider anyways to be the core issue and the reason why everything is so disjointed is just the lack of wisdom and common sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we'll both keep on keeping on.
Yeah.
And, okay.
Yeah, you keep doing your great stuff because love your show. You get a lot of good people on and a lot of things that are certainly pointed in the right direction. Lord, he knows we need more of that because got enough stuff that's getting publicized that's pointed in the wrong direction. So.
I'm very blessed. Everything has been falling into place effortlessly, and the fabulous people that I've met along the way who I know I'll be friends with for years and years to come, you know, for as long as I live. And, you know, just when I thought I didn't have room in my life for any more friends because I have so many, I have five best friends. I actually have five best friends, and I thought, I used to tell myself, I don't have room in my life for a friend unless someone dies or resigns. But you know what? I opened up my heart, and here came 100 new people. So
yeah.
And they're all fantastic.
There you go.
And there's room for everybody.
And they're attracted to you because you do it. I mean, you say things just come to you effortlessly. That's your point of view because you got the kind of mind and heart that will tell you that. I know how much work you do. This doesn't happen all together by itself. It's not like something drops out of the sky and then all of a sudden everything's going smoothly, life is great, and we're dancing through the fairy dust and stuff, and the leprechauns are bringing us pots of gold. I mean,
washing my dishes.
Yeah, it takes some doing. But what folks don't realize is that no matter what you do, it takes some doing. I mean, it takes a lot of effort and a conscious decision to be miserable. And it takes a lot of effort and a conscious decision to be happy and to make those around you happy and to improve the state of the world you're living in. Well, if you're going to be working your ass off under any circumstances, again, it's not rocket science to point it in the right direction. And I know that you do a lot of work as well as having this, you know, come to you in a sense naturally, but that naturally is because you've tuned your individual station to something that's, well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And so that's why wonderful things come to you.
I said yes. I opened my arms, and there it was, and I built it. I built it, and I mean, I put a lot of effort into it. I'm very detailed. But, I worked for over 6 months, 16-hour days, 7 days a week. But it was worth it. It was worth it.
Yeah.
And I know that I can make a difference. You know, that's what I wanted to do. That's what I said at the age of five. I want to make a difference. And so perhaps I'm on my way. I'm not saying I'm the be-all, end-all, but perhaps I'm on my way to some really notable achievements. But we'll see.
Well, you're doing it, and I'm trying to, and what a lot of people don't realize, perhaps a lot of your listenership does because they're already tuned into you here. But what a lot of people don't realize is that being nice to other people and extending yourself for others and putting some effort into helping the world is one of the most selfish things you can do, because there is no other happiness. That, I mean, like, look, you give a kid a present for Christmas, and he opens up that present, and you see the glow on the kid's face. That's going to be better for you, make you feel better than if you had gotten the present yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, just to see that, you know. So folks don't realize, otherwise everybody would be out there doing something for somebody. Because, I recommend to any of your listeners, go do something for somebody. Doesn't matter what, all right? Go, it could be as simple as, like, going helping somebody, your husband or wife, wash the dishes when they don't expect the help.
Yeah.
Going to help an old lady with her bags coming out of the store when she can't carry them all or something. Small thing. It doesn't have to be, you know, rebuild the universe or anything. But any of that is going to have a definite effect towards rebuilding the universe, for one thing, and it's also going to make you feel so damn good, you're going to want to keep doing it. I mean,
that's
what happened. From personal experience, I started doing that little bit of an Africa thing, mostly for the kids that I was working with, as much as for the starving Ethiopians.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 50-50 deal, and
right.
I saw how that worked and took off by itself, and I can't stop doing it now because it's like such a, yeah, it feels so, I mean, when you see somebody benefiting by something you've done, there's no other feeling like that. You know?
I feel like if I had to stop this, I would just crumble up and die. You know, it'd be like a very slow, quick death kind of thing. Like it would just be the worst place. It's like feeling soulless. You know, just feeling soulless, and I feel so driven, and I love having a feeling that I have a life of purpose and of meaning, and everything falls into place where it needs to, and then cultivating the ability to let go of what does not fall into place, where exactly as you want it, where you want it, when you want it, when you can really go with the flow of the stream that you've been referencing throughout this show, that's when you get it. That's when you get it. And when you go with that flow, you can make huge impact on other people's lives and on their consciousness. Because if we all do what Ten is saying, like go help somebody when they least expect it, you never know where somebody is in their mind as you walk past them. But what if that little old lady who is having a hard time carrying her shopping bags just lost her husband of 50 years and wants to go home and off herself? You know, you don't know how much that tiny act of kindness might just shift her thinking. Might just make her think that there is meaning in this world, you know?
Yeah. Actually, one of the closing chapters in the Fearless Puppy book is called Never Underestimate a Little Act of Kindness. And it's about how somebody did something for me and saved me from going into had no idea what was actually going on. But they did a little bit of something for me, just a small thing, and it ended up maybe saving my life altogether and keeping me from a whole bunch of bad stuff that might have happened otherwise. So it was funny when you said a tiny act of consideration like that, of kindness, right? I actually have, that's one of the closing chapters in the book, is Never Underestimate a Little Act of Kindness, because the smallest thing you can do, you don't know what kind of ripple that's going to cause.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And then you smile, and you don't know what's going to happen. That by itself, and the reward you get in your heart from doing something nice, but you don't know down the road that thing that you did for that person put you in a better mood so that they didn't yell at the next person they met, whereas otherwise they might have. And if that other person had gotten yelled at, they might have gotten pissed off and hit somebody.
Yes.
And if that person got hit, they might have been irritated enough back to stab that person.
Uh-huh.
There's no telling. There's no way to underestimate, to overestimate or predict what every little act of kindness does. But even if it's just the result you see, even if you just give that kid that present and the kid opens it up
and you see that
glow and that smile on it, that by itself is good enough. But all these things, like you say, Charlotte, they have multiple repercussions.
Yes.
You know? So.
And don't worry that you can't see it. It doesn't matter, because in God's eyes, it does matter to Him. It matters to your soul. And when we all go home to meet our Maker, and we're all going to do it, it's on every one of our lists. We're all going to go home, and we're all going to sit down and watch a movie of our lives, and then we're going to find out the impact that we really had. And we're going to see times in our lives where, yes, we have done things that were kind and selfless and did things for others and feel like it's not recognized or appreciated. But the one who recognizes it and appreciates it most, that's who it counts the most with. And at some point, we have to trust that, I think.
Well, it's maybe. I don't know. I don't take that particular angle myself. I think we're here, and this is what we have to do is here. And if I'm going to be sitting in a theater eating popcorn watching my movie with God one day, okay, so be it. But meanwhile, we're here, and it's real obvious that on Earth people are suffering, and we have to do something about this. And it's within our power to do something. And I'm just of the school, you know, like the monk said that I told you about earlier, if there is some over there or whatever, it's only going to be defined by what we do here.
Here.
All right? I'm not even thinking about the over there. Whatever that is what it is. I can see what's right in front of me. I can see when somebody's crying. I can see when somebody's hungry. And that's, to me, you know, life on Earth is the important thing. I'm not one to go in for that. I don't deny it. I mean, I don't know. But I'm not one to to go in for the your reward will come to you later kind of thing, or
right.
this is what God would want or anything. This is basic human decency. All right,
yeah.
And I think there's a danger in covering it up with metaphor and different kinds of stuff, which a lot of people have done. I'll read you just a very short paragraph off the back of the book. This is off reincarnation. This down-to-earth treatment gives a clear view in simple terms of truth that we more often find fossilized within concretized symbols beneath rusting metaphor. All right, and that often happens where people get distracted in the story and forget to live it, you know. There's nothing wrong, obviously. It's a wonderful thing to consider what might happen later, and that does something to trip your trigger as far as acting here. Okay, that's great, but as far as I'm concerned, it all goes on here. It's all real obvious. There's nothing that is not right in front of everybody's eyes. There's no mysteries to unravel. There's mysteries to experience as opposed to unravel. I don't need to know the answers to anything, okay? Mm. Why this, what that, doesn't matter. All will take care of itself later, you know.
Right.
What I need to know here is that person ain't going to be hungry tomorrow because of something I did, and that person isn't going to be lonely because I stopped and talked to him, and that I'm going to be happier myself for doing all these things for people. And, again, it's not that I'm denying any other cosmic possibilities. I'm certainly in touch with that. There's a lot of spirit out there. But
right.
I'm a firm believer in the fact that if you take care of it here, that's not only is that going to take care of it there, if there is a there, but that's the only thing that will take care of it
that
there.
That will take care of it there.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, there's nothing else. It'll take care of it there. You don't be an asshole all your life, and then on your deathbed you say, I accept Jesus, or you say a certain Buddhist prayer or Jewish prayer, and then you go to heaven. It's nonsense. It's nonsense.
Well, the reason I said that, I seldom go into a minor rant, but then it feels like almost like somebody has a hand on my back saying, you have to say this. So somebody listening had to hear that, and I can recognize the importance because even with my clients and students, a lot of them say to me, "Why should I bother?" And that's one of their a lot of us have expectations that if they don't see the results of what they do, they don't think there's a point in doing it, and that's why I felt compelled to say that because I respect your beliefs and where you're coming from, but somebody listening had to. Might have needed to hear that, so it had to be said, basically. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it certainly does make sense, and I would go even a step further with it and say, why should I do this? Well, you can look at that God's going to be looking at your movie later, but you can go out and give yourself a concrete example. Go help somebody. See what that person looks like after you've been nice to them, and see what you feel like yourself after you've been nice to somebody. That's why you should do that.
Because
we're all living here together on Earth, and the only way that life is going to get better is if we individually work on it, and all of us work on it. And, I'm not saying we're not going to be sitting with God watching that movie. I'm certainly not saying that. But, I'm not saying we are either, but whatever happens. Yeah, the simple fact of the matter, it's not only, simple focus, but the factual thing of it is, it seems pretty obvious that you're not going to influence what the viewing of that movie is going to be like unless you do it here.
Exactly.
And you don't have to be focusing on some other place. This again comes to the out-of-body versus the in-body experience.
Right.
This is
no,
an
you want to focus on the
experience.
Now, not the outcome, the eventual outcome after you die. That is certainly too far-reaching. But
right.
You find comfort in the idea that it's not wasted. You know, your effort is not wasted. These small acts of kindness, they do matter, and they matter to how you feel just as much as how they make other people feel. And just trust that your time and your effort is not wasted. That's all I was basically saying.
I'm not getting arbitrary here. It's not that I'm disagreeing with you. It's just that I tend to look at it from a different angle, and there's nothing wrong with any of these angles. They're all good.
Well,
but my particular angle is that if you help the other person, you know, do something positive, you're going to know right away what the reason is for doing this, just by the way you feel.
Yes.
After you do that, even if you don't see it show up in the other person, which no doubt you will, but it's definitely going to, if you're just paying attention to yourself, having an in-body experience, knowing what's going on in your own mind and heart as it's going on, it'll be real obvious to anybody who does something positive, because they'll feel it and you go, ooh, yeah. I like that.
That's what's up. That's what's real, you know?
Yeah.
Well, we're...
Yeah, that's a reality. I mean, all of it could be real. You know, all of it could very well be real. But that is the real that nobody can argue with, because there
it
is.
That is what's truly real, not the, you know, concrete objects that we think acquiring is going to make us happy. It's about each other. It's about being here for each other. Well, we're about out of time, and it's been awesome getting to know you even more, and the way you think and the way you process things is fascinating. And everyone, if you could be part of this mission, it would really be helpful. Tell people about it. If you're looking for a unique gift for Christmas or another gift-giving occasion, go to the website, fearlesspuppy.org. Read about Ten's project. Go look at the newspaper article with him standing on the sidewalk with one of those cardboard sandwich things. You got to see this picture. It's crazy, and it's got his little advertisement on there. Go check it out. It's really fascinating. Buy the book, give it as a gift, and encourage others as well to do the same thing. Coworkers, if everybody's in a giving mood for the holidays, buy one book and give it to somebody. It could help them. And I just want to thank you, Ten, for coming on and sharing your heart with the rest of us. I really appreciate it.
Well, I want to thank you for being there and all the wonderful work that you do, and I know how much of it there is, it's much appreciated. And if we're ever up there watching the movie with God, you're going to get a front row seat.
How cool is that?
And regardless, you're going to have a real good and happy life, just because it's got to happen, just because of who you are and what you do. You could be sitting on a bar stool and shooting pool all day for the rest of your life, or you could be out there trying to actually do something constructive for yourself as well as everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you found the top end of that spectrum there.
I do, and it started when I was 5 years old. Remember in the 70s, that Coke commercial where they're all singing, I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony.
Yeah.
I'd like to buy the world a Coke and keep it company. That hit me extremely hard. That hit me extremely hard, and I said, that's what I want to do with my life, and that is what I'm doing.
See, you never know. You never know. Now, Coca-Cola isn't exactly the nicest people in the world. They're spreading some sugar water and stuff that's basically non-functional around. They support some, addictive, and they support some nasty causes, but you never know, because look what happened here, you know. They helped to turn a little girl into this monstrously positive woman that's doing all this good stuff for so many people.
Yeah.
So,
well, I appreciate that.
You never know where it's going to come from. And people want similar stories, and Fearless Puppy, there are hookers and junkies and all kinds of people with it, thieves, the kernels of wisdom. Just tune yourself to the kernels of wisdom in there. So you tuned yourself to the positive part of that message without becoming addicted to Coca-Cola. So we're doubly proud of you.
There you go. There you go. Yes, I made some pretty good choices in my life. I'm very proud. Well,
there
that's
you
our
go.
Show. You'll have to come back again, and we'll just hang out and talk. I don't care what we talk about, okay?
It'd be my pleasure. I love you. I'll come back whenever you want.
I love you, too.
All right,
hey,
be well.
I'll talk to you soon. That's our show for today, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please buy his books. Please join the mission to help the wisdom cultivators of the world, the wisdom professionals. We will see you soon. Until then, God bless and be at peace.